Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber Podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we're venturing out just a little bit. It's good to think outside of the Dublin bubble. Is that what we're actually, Martin? You don't live in Dublin.
No, I'm in Meath for my sins, but I am still a Dub, Tony. And as I keep saying, you need me on this line. You want me on this line, you know.
He really does.
Keeping them out of Dublin.
He's laughing about it, guys, but you've no idea how serious he is. He genuinely thinks he's holding back the hordes. Just quick thing for listeners, do, if you are a member, tomorrow morning, we have an incredible panel lined up on the Mother and Baby Home Report, and we will be going live. So you can go to patreon.com/tortoiseshack, click on the link and join, sit in the audience. We will be taking questions. We will be going deep into what is a very troubling report and some of the responses that we've seen to it. Anyway, enough of that. We're delighted to be joined all the way from Cambodia by Director of Development with Sea Beyond Borders, Colm Byrne. Colm, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks, Martin. And congratulations on the excellent podcast. I'm a Fingalian from Fingal. So that probably makes me a half dub, does it?
Yeah. No, you're kind of one foot.
No, it makes you a brother of mine. Is what it makes. And you're not from Fingal. You were born in North County Dublin, and they took it away from us. They took it away from us and called it Fingal.
Exactly.
It's far from Fingal you are now, Colm. Colm, you might just start first of all and give us a sense of, like, you're in Cambodia since 2014. So give us a sense of who you are and what Sea Beyond Borders are. Just give us, our listeners, a quick rundown, if you don't mind.
100%. Delighted to do so. So part of my identity is I'm Irish from North County Dublin. Another part of my identity, Tony, is I've lived in Cambodia for 6 years. And a further part of my identity is I'm a teacher. And I first came to Cambodia 6.5 years ago. I was originally intending to be here for a month, then go back to school in Dunabate, North County Dublin. But there was something that I found instantly magnetic about Cambodia. It was the people, to be honest. And I was immediately drawn to here. And yeah, I live here in northern Cambodia, in Siem Reap, with my Cambodian boyfriend. And I'm Director of Development with Sea Beyond Borders. And what we do is we train teachers here in Cambodia.
Like 6 years, 6.5 years, where you found something that you I suppose the big question is, did Sea Beyond Borders exist, or was it just so at that stage when you joined, it became a calling? Is that fair?
Without being too grand about it, yeah, probably that's probably a fair way of summing up. There's it gives life a pulse, gives it a bit of meaning. And Cambodia is a huge amount of NGOs. It's the second largest number of NGOs anywhere in the world. The problem isn't quantity. There's enough NGOs. The problem is quality. And I was drawn to Sea Beyond Borders, Tony, because of the founders, Ed and Kate. A lot of charities here rely on emotion. There's a lot of passion that goes into them, which is great. But with Sea Beyond Borders, there was something a little bit different. There was a bit of logic, or a lot of logic, and a lot of quality. We have a very troubled history here with 80% of teachers killed. The education system is still to this day grappling with the horrors of the Khmer Rouge and the ensuing challenges. So Sea Beyond Borders was trying to do something a little bit different that was focusing on people, not focusing on buildings or building things, but rather focusing on building teachers, which was, to me, the right approach and the right way to go about things. So delighted to work for Sea Beyond Borders.
You've mentioned the people a couple of times, Colm. What is it about the people that you find so special?
Good question. I find Cambodian people of a special way. They listen. They have a huge thirst for learning. I know a lot of Cambodian people who are highly intelligent, but not very well educated. And when Cambodian people have a chance to get a quality education, they grasp it And they have a huge sense of pride in it. And Cambodian people have a different way about them. You know, you go to a coffee shop in Cambodia, you order your coffee. It's an entirely different experience to ordering a coffee in Dublin or Meath. Things here are done at a slower pace. They might get the order wrong, but the experience is very meaningful, and the experience is very much a casual. You take your time. It suits me, somebody like me who's quite frenetic in life. The slower pace suits.
I want to broaden that out then, because Cambodia, as you said, has a very troubled history. It's emerging from this situation. Its economy wasn't exactly robust before we were faced into a global pandemic. How did that impact things and situations, and more importantly, from your point of view, the ability to teach teachers?
Yeah, well, it's a complex story, I suppose, Tony, because on one hand, we've been very lucky in Cambodia and actually throughout the Mekong region in terms of case numbers have been low. So we've only had 426 cases to date in total, which is extremely low compared to yourselves on the island of Ireland. But that's the positive. The negative side then has been our economy is built on tourism here in Siem Reap, and international tourism is down 98%. The other industries, top three industries, are farming, garment industry, and tourism. Garment industry and tourism have been decimated. In terms of our own work in schools have been closed for most of last year because there's a lot of fear here, obviously, about the virus spreading, and Cambodia perhaps not being very equipped for that. So children missed an awful lot of school last year. They reopened on Monday, which we're delighted about. But there's been a huge learning loss. And there's also been early indications would say that there's been an increase in school dropouts. So a lot of Cambodian children wouldn't finish primary school. So the numbers who are dropping out are set to increase as other demands become more pressing.
Colm, how are you surviving for money? How's the funding going? Where are you getting the money from? How much money do you need? Tell us how you're getting on there, particularly in the pandemic.
Sure, yeah. Our funding has taken a hit, Martin, because we've relied on some corporates who've seen their own funding go down significantly. So we've made staff redundant. We've reduced staff numbers significantly. But our programs, our work relies on people, and it's very important we keep people. Having said that, we've had we've some supporters, or most of our supporters have been very loyal to us, both in Australia. We get this money from the Australian government, and of course in Ireland with various supporters in Ireland. So we're holding out in that one, and we're hoping to build our support base, particularly in Ireland, going forward.
How are you going to do that, Colm?
Connections. I think there's a lot of similarities between Cambodia and Ireland in terms of very troubled recent past, like the north of Ireland here, countries blighted by emigration, ourselves in Cambodia, same with Ireland not long ago, and small countries. And we found we gotten very good support from people in Ireland who feel an affinity, who have visited here. We get support from fantastic corporate called Horseware, which has a factory here and a factory in Ireland. We get support from the ESB, so Electric Aid, the INTO, and we get some support from Irish Aid as well. All those things are very, very meaningful and very important for us because we don't exist without fuel in the tank.
It strikes me that, again, to bring it back to the ground level, that education, you said yourself that Cambodian people are very wise, but haven't got a great education. And, you know, we've spoken to several educators in this podcast. Actually, funnily enough, most of this week has been around educating remote learning, parenting from home, and all of these things. In terms of those facilities, I mean, I've got two kids out the back there on remote, on devices now, actually, you know, doing homeschool hub and all of these terms that we've all become familiar with over the last 12 months. Does that infrastructure exist in Cambodia?
The short answer is no. So they have tried things in terms of the ministry, in terms of putting things online on Facebook, etc. But the vast, vast majority of Cambodian households wouldn't have internet, wouldn't have Wi-Fi. Electricity sometimes is an issue, and then it comes back to as well. Even if you don't have those facilities, the majority who would have survived the Khmer Rouge are illiterate. So when parents are trying to teach children, and they lack the skills themselves, it can be difficult. So education relies on people, and it does rely on qualified people to do the job. So it's been very difficult when schools were closed.
Yeah, it's very difficult. I'd say. Sounds like you're being kind. You mentioned Irish Aid themselves. Are they active in Cambodia?
Yeah, Irish Aid, we have an embassy in Vietnam. So that serves Cambodia, Laos and Vietnam. And we're thankful to get some support from Irish Aid. They've been good to us. Their primary focus to date has been Vietnam. But they're looking at perhaps establishing greater links in Cambodia and elsewhere. You know, in terms of Irish Aid, they're a very credible donor. They're very well regarded internationally, and we're very keen to get their support. We're also keen to kind of, you know, share why we believe that Cambodian education is in bad need because of the destruction that happened in the Khmer Rouge. And because how education standards here, you know, differ to Vietnam, different to Thailand. I might just give you one stat, Tony and Martin, and it's the percentage of Cambodian children at 15 who are on track. It's 17%. And if you compare that to Vietnam, it's 86%. Thailand, 73%. So often, you know, people talk about, oh, Southeast Asia, the Mekong region, as if they're one country. It's like a bit like Irish people when people call us, and being from a neighboring country, Cambodia is radically different to Vietnam, Thailand in particular. We have pressing needs here. We require investment, and we also require the right type of investment. So the investment at the right dose, and also targeted at the right things.
How welcome are you in Cambodia, Colm? Are they happy to have you there?
Yes, they are. Sometimes too welcoming, arguably, towards foreigners, to be honest, Martin. But no, Cambodian people are very hospitable by nature. And, you know, if you can make the little bit of an effort to learn the language, embrace the culture. I'm not so good in the food. But if you make the effort, and you don't come in with preset ideas, I think Cambodian people are very, very receptive, and they want people here who can help. But at the end of the day, as good as I am or as good as Ed and Kate are, it comes down to Cambodian people, and our only role really is to help Cambodian people do better. And if we can do that, you know, that's something to look in the mirror at night and say, that's a decent thing done.
This is not to pick at anybody, but you made a comment, and it's just been bouncing around my head for the last few minutes, about Cambodia having the second highest number of NGOs in now, by any stretch, any definition, that fits in with a classification of where a state is failing. How is the state itself performing, whereby it seems to have, with by those metrics, they've outsourced a lot of responsibility to the NGO sector?
Yeah, and there have been challenges here. We have the same prime minister here for well over 35 years, 36 years, I think it was yesterday. But there has been progress made. So if I give you education, for example, there's been a lot of progress made on getting children access to school. So more children attend school now. Mm. The problem is keeping children in school, and that's called an education. So you can get children to school, you can build a building, which many NGOs do. They love to slap their name on the building, built by Joe Blobs in London, Sydney, Dublin. It's harder sometimes to get people to invest in people. And that's a different attitude and a different mentality. But we've got good relations with the ministry. They were in Ireland recently, pre-pandemic, with us in March. And there's some real people there who are trying to strive for better and trying to improve their country. And we need to help and support those people.
It really is a mammoth task when, I suppose, three generations of educated people were wiped out very quickly. So it's a mammoth, mammoth task to re-educate a country where education was stripped off. What kind of timeline do you think it's going to take? Is it going to take three generations to get back again?
It's a mammoth task and a mammoth opportunity. It takes time, absolutely, Martin. And it takes, you know, we found even with improving teachers, you can do a teacher workshop and that can be great. But then actually is the teacher implementing the workshop in the classroom? That's why we do mentoring, and our mentoring program takes 3 years. So to improve things at a larger level, you're definitely talking generations, but piece by piece, little by little, if we can do our best within our own small way and help that spread elsewhere, you know, we will get there step by step.
Colm, just if you were given, you know, if you were told, look, there's a couple of things you could ask for now. What would they be? What would be your main asks? Be that internationally or internally?
Fuel in the tank. One of our biggest, and it might be an easy answer, but one of our biggest challenges is to raise funding, and that's particularly true at the moment because, rightly, people are looking locally. There's no tourism here, so there's not, you know, the same opportunities that there were pre-pandemic. So we need fuel in the tank, number one, and we need that fuel in the tank to get the right people. We have some fantastic Cambodian staff, and we work with upskilling our staff constantly. But good staff, you have to pay them decently. We pay our staff not over the above rate at all, but we pay them decently, and they deserve that. And thirdly, you know, we'd welcome people to listen, to share our story, to get involved with us. We've had connections in Ireland in particular with people who are involved in educational research, policy analysts, because we're relying on international experience as well to give us that support and help improve things.
Is there a difference in educational access for boys and girls? Or, I mean, we see that in other countries. Does that apply in Cambodia as well?
It does, yes. And it's two-sided historically. Men got far better education than women. So 28% of men reach secondary school compared to 15% of women. However, at present, girls do far better in school than boys. Both girls and boys in Cambodia do very poorly in school generally, but relatively speaking, girls do better. They tend to stay in school a little bit longer, and their learning outcomes are somewhat better. And if you look in some areas in high school, junior high school, there would be far more girls in the classroom than boys, you know, 80%, 70%, those sorts of things. But the answer is that girls absolutely need support. And boys absolutely need support in different ways. And there's targeted things that we try and do, particularly with girls, to help and support them, to keep them in school. Because when you educate a girl or the mother, there's societal impacts there that are profound.
Colm, I'm conscious that I keep picking at it, but you've again referenced the fact that we have these skill gaps, knowledge gaps, and the ability to get there. We are still in the midst of the pandemic, and schools, you said, reopened on Monday. Is there a plan coming out of this now that you guys are starting to you know keeping your programs running, and how effective can that be? Are there rolling lockdowns? Are there restrictions? Is everything open freely, or is it just still in that sort of semi-lockdown life?
A quarter lockdown, maybe. So the borders are closed, but schools are open, and we're allowed travel interprovincially, so we can go from province to province. So our work in schools is continuing. We work in 26 schools in Battambang, in Cambodia, and our work is continuing with COVID. So schools are open for the time being, though there has been a recent upsurge in cases. But it's vital, you know, from an education perspective, because the infrastructure isn't really here in Cambodia to do distance learning, that schools remain open for as long as possible. And there's various options, whether that's reducing class numbers, where we in the ministry must be flexible in terms of how we deliver it.
Colm, just want to ask you, when was the last time you were home?
And when was home?
And do you have any prospect of getting home anytime soon?
Yeah, well, home is Cambodia. But the last time I was in Ireland was March. I was actually there. We were there with the Ministry of Education, and it was right before the pandemic. It was gas. We met, you know, various minister in Ireland. We met Irish Aid. We had a fantastic time seeing schools. And the next day, it was like lockdown. Well, schools had just begun to close there, and actually case numbers had started here. And when do I intend to go back? Hopefully in 2021. We started a charity there in Ireland. We're the only charity dedicated exclusively to improving education in Cambodia. So there's big opportunities there to engage there. So I'm very keen to get back for that reason, and also to see my mom and family.
Colm, just one call to listeners. If they want the support, if they want the raisings, where do they find the information?
Our website is seebeyondborders.org. So SEE beyondborders.org. The email address is info@seebeyondborders.org. And, you know, we'd love to get in touch with you. You know, people who have contacted us in the past, you know, meet for a coffee, a virtual coffee even these days. It's broad opportunity. So if anybody's interested in engaging with our work, please do make contact.
You'll get Colm at Colm Cambodia on Twitter as well, folks. He's easy got at that way, you know. But no, look, it's very... I'm delighted you said Cambodia is home. We're big in that, where we have people who've arrived in Ireland several years. You know, we've seen it only this week, where we've spoken to people who are working frontline workers in our healthcare system who are still struggling with citizenship and residency. Can I ask that as my final question? How, you know, in terms of residency and citizenship, is that easily or more easily achieved in Cambodia for you as a Westerner?
No. To become a Cambodian citizen, there's quite rigorous protocols you need to do in terms of, you need to be here, I believe, for 10 years. I'm over halfway there, and I'll be here for 10 at least. There's also rules around language, so you need to have a certain proficiency of the language. I see that as positive. I think, you know, if you're here 10 years, I want to learn the language. I want to become a Cambodian citizen while obviously retaining my nationality, which is Irish. It's Cambodia is wonderful like that.
Colm, it's been really lovely to talk to you, and thank you so much for taking the time to have this conversation with us. Greatly appreciated.
Martin, Tony, Gurmila Mahogwiv, thank you so much for the opportunity. It's great. And keep up the great work on the podcast. I listen in regularly from CMRE.
I really appreciate that, Colm. And again, listeners, again, seebeyondborders.org. It's very simple. Have a look. Just peruse it. The actual link will be in this podcast blurb, so you can't miss it. All you got to do is hit it with your thumb and see how you can maybe chip in. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin. Martin and Tony. Speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.